Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, and we are brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. It's Tuesday night, almost midnight on the East Coast. We've just watched the Los Angeles Clippers get knocked right on their you-know-what out of the playoffs by the Denver Nuggets, and a tremendous game one in the Eastern Conference Finals. We are here to talk about it. Joining us from Dallas is Tim Band McMahon. Hello, Tim.
Howdy, partners.
And joining us from San Francisco is Nick Friedel. Nick, I hope you're doing well. Hope you're hanging in there out there.
B, I'm making it. It's good to be with you guys again.
Well, this night is going to be remembered for a long time, and there's a whole bunch of different reasons why people are going to remember it. The Laker fans have their reasons. The Clippers fans have their reasons. The Nuggets fans have their reasons. I think I just watched.
Are there still Clippers fans?
it's rough right now. I mean, I think any team that had would have experienced what just happened there, that is a devastating blow. But what I think I just watched, and McMahon, I'll see if you agree, was an absolute, total grade A choke.
Oh,
not just so much in the 3-1 aspect. I mean, that choke,
but especially
too,
in the 3-1 aspect, especially in the blowing double figure leads in the last three games while choking that 3-1.
But even setting that aside, I'm just talking about the actual performance of tonight.
Oh, what? It only took them 7 minutes in the fourth quarter to get a bucket.
Yeah. Okay.
How about
so,
playoff P? More turnovers than freaking.
All right, hold on. Hold your fire. Just for a second. Hold
he
your
did
fire.
It at the side of the backboard.
I know. Hold your fire for a second. I think what I saw was a historic choke job and combined with a spectacular Game 7 performance by the Nuggets.
Well, a spectacular three-game comeback by the Nuggets. And look, let's give the Nuggets credit. Two straight series, down 3-1, come back, win both series. Jokic has, like, there's no yeah but with Jokic. He is at minimum a second-tier superstar right behind the perennial MVP candidates.
Well, he was a first-tier superstar in this game.
Oh, for
he
sure.
He totally eviscerated Kawhi Leonard in this game, and really in the back half of the series, but in this game especially.
Yeah. I mean, he was great in this game. Just look at the box score. Paul Millsap only had 6 points, but his buckets were huge. He played. That was one of the better 6 point, 3 rebound performances I've ever seen. Jamal Murray, we got to get, and this guy's on the cojones factor starting five this year, 40 points in a game 7. So, yes, absolutely. Give the Nuggets credit. We've got time to talk nice about the Nuggets, but what we need to do right now is pile on the most arrogant bunch of guys, the most arrogant franchise that's never sniffed a freaking conference finals. And hey, props to the Portland Trailblazers backcourt for completely unloading their troll game. Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum absolutely deserved to just fire away, because you've got Paul George and Patrick Beverley acting like they're on some freaking dynasty. They've never sniffed the conference finals. Why are they acting like they're some, come on now. So yes, I'll be honest. I thoroughly enjoyed the collapse and the troll jobs that came along with it.
Nick, you've seen a lot of NBA basketball. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything quite like that. The Heat in the 2011 finals is kind of comparable, but it was the finals and it was a 6-game series. They were ahead 2-1, not 3-1. They were playing against Dirk. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like it.
I haven't. There is nothing comparable for me, B, because this was the team, this Clippers team, that I thought absolutely from the second that they signed Kawhi and Paul George, and then we saw the other moves that were made, I thought this was the clear favorite. This was the team, if they stayed healthy with Doc Rivers running the show, that was going to win the title. And that's why the collapse is so unbelievably stunning. They had all the pieces in place. The rhythm was just never there, though. It never was there, and it was always, oh, well, they're not healthy. They haven't played together. No, I mean, Kawhi Leonard, in my mind, coming into this series, into this moment, was the very best player in the league. If you had one game where you needed
stop
one
going
guy,
bomb tips on us.
No, but if you needed one game with one guy, he had proven it time and again. Okay. And you've got to hold Kawhi.
Yeah, last week at bomb tips.
I mean, you can. We could spend time arguing over whether you want him versus anybody else, but it's not arguable that Kawhi Leonard's status as finisher. Was very strong.
And that's what makes this shocking, is that they choked away double-figure leads in Game 5, again in Game 6. You're like, okay, surely Game 7, they'll show some killer instinct, they'll step on their throat. And honestly, Kawhi stunk, and Paul George was worse. I mean, this isn't a case of like the role players. They're two superstars just got completely outplayed. They stunk it up in a game 7.
But Timmy, I'd add this quickly, and I mean, the Clippers deserve every amount of piling on that people are going to give them because of what this year was supposed to be and the moves that they made prior to the season to get them where they were supposed to finally win a title. But I give Denver so much credit, because guys, how many times over the years have we seen a team go down 3-1 in regular normal times and go, ah, we're done.
1-2-3 Cancun, like Pat Bev likes to say.
Get me out of here. I don't want to be here anymore. I mean, it's like the Eric Bledsoe tweet come to life. Like, a lot of these teams go down and they are like, all right, we're done. Let's get home, especially now in the bubble. So for Denver, that – I don't even think a lot of people in Denver are that into that team. They've got the TV issues with seeing the games on. I've never gotten the sense that team was as beloved as it could be in that market.
You're not kidding. That's a really good point. Like, most of their fans, or a lot of their fans, couldn't even see their games.
Yeah.
I think they just came to a resolution right before the bubble, if I'm not mistaken. Well, so that their fans can see their games.
Like, I remember I was there when Russ broke the record for triple doubles in a season and had that crazy, like, 30 something foot buzzer beater to win it and give him 50 points for the game
and eliminate the Nuggets
playoff.
Right? Yeah.
And the Denver crowd gave him a standing ovation. Team gets eliminated from the playoff, and the home crowd's giving the opponent a standing ovation. So there's definitely a weird fan base factor, but you know, hey, I mean, if we want to talk about weird fan base factors, the Clippers definitely have that. I will say this: playoffs our way, with the little LA thing in playoffs. Playoffs our way. The Clippers absolutely lived up to that slogan. This was playoffs the Clippers way.
Oh man, this is going to be open season with stuff like that. You know, one of the things, you know, if you've been listening to this podcast over the last 7 or 8 days, or even if you haven't, I mean, I've been growing more and more concerned by what I've been seeing with the Clippers. And I mean, this isn't exactly, you know, mind bending an analysis here, but it became clear to me in the second half that the Nuggets were just flat out the better team. And even if the Clippers had played better, I'm not sure that the incorrect team, I think it was appropriate that Denver won. I think they were the better team. And, you know, there's going to be some top-down analysis that's going to be done here by the Clippers as they figure out what happened. And, you know, there's a number of things. You know, Patrick Beverley fouls too much. Montrezl Harrell completely, I think he's out of condition. He can't rebound. Right. And he was a little bit better.
Can't guard Jokic.
I mean, that was an embarrassment. You know, Doc Rivers' strategies throughout the entire series were just off. And Doc has now got to live with 3-1 defeats on his record. And quite frankly, this is a stain on his record. It's a stain on Kawhi's record. It's a stain on Paul George's record. Paul George's
big NBA chat right now is a nightmare.
Well, so Sig is sports.
Yes. Doc Rivers ties Pat Riley for most losses by a coach in postseason history and clinch opportunities. Riley was 40-27 in those games. So Rivers is 14.
Our Sig is our statisticians, just so you know.
And Doc Rivers' 8 losses in Game 7 are 3 more than any other coach all time. Doc Rivers has the worst win percentage in postseason history and clinch opportunities among coaches with at least 20 games. Doc Rivers is the only coach in NBA history to blow multiple 3-1 series leads. And as you just mentioned, Wendy, this is the third time. I mean, oh, man. Thank goodness that you have to that Doc can't access the SIG chat.
Well, you know, the moment in this game where I realized, I think it was where I realized that it was truly over, was when Doc went to Reggie Jackson off the bench as his first guard off the bench in the third quarter. He didn't go to Lou Williams because Lou was horrible. And he went to Reggie Jackson, and Reggie immediately took 2 ridiculous shots and committed a stupid foul. And I thought, Doc is panicking. Doc is literally is panicking, and his option is Reggie Jackson. And the team that I really thought was, you know, I've talked about this, I thought their depth, I mean, all of a sudden it was like, boy, it's laid bare. They can't trust anybody. And like, you know, the like in the fourth quarter where Jermichael Green misses a wide open dunk and Lou Williams misses a layup and Paul George hits the side of the backboard. And another time, I think he hit the underside of the backboard. I mean, that's just flat out choking. Okay. They're, you know, they had collapsed by then, but I'm talking about the actual bones of the team. They were not good enough. And that's an extraordinary misjudgment by a lot of people. And if, you know, if you're a Laker fan, you're obviously going to be celebrating and pointing and making fun of the Clippers. You're making fun of the people who thought the Clippers were going to be the championship team this year. I was one of them, and that's fine. But there was a lot of people who rationally looked at this and thought this was a great team, and they proved not to be a great team. And it wasn't like they were the Bucks, where they were on pace for 70 wins. They were not a great team throughout the entire season.
Hey, best Clippers team of all time.
That is true. No Clippers team's ever gone this far.
It's a reminder to me, though, guys, that you can have all the talent in the world on a roster, at least on paper, but there is a different type of mental toughness that's needed to win in the postseason. And we've seen it year after year after year after year. There are different type of players and rosters that come together when you need to win the most. And that's why, like, I just don't want to get it lost. I mean, I gave the Nuggets no chance, none, to get out of this series. But to come back down 3-1 twice in a bubble and to see the Clippers melt down the way they have with Kawhi, with Paul George. I mean, B, you said it, and it is so true. It's a stain on both of their legacies, but especially with Doc. That I am stunned that a Doc Rivers coach team in this moment, given the historical significance of what's going on, just completely melted down the way that they did. Well, and players deserve all the blame, but well,
you could make the argument that he's overseen this kind of meltdown before.
But you know, he's also won a title before. So I see both sides of it. But in this moment against a team that I know a lot of us thought was they were clearly better than the Nuggets, to see them just disintegrate like this is unbelievable.
And you said it's about, you know, mental toughness. Obviously, Kawhi's got the mental toughness because he's a 2-time finals MVP. I'm telling you, the Clippers were the most arrogant team in the league this season. This was their arrogance biting them in the ass. They got up 3-1, thought they could coast. They got up double figures in game 5, thought they could coast. They got up double figures in game 6, thought they could coast. They came in and Jokic wasn't lying when he was with Malika Andrews on the little post game interview. He wasn't lying when he said the Clippers had all the pressure on them. They got up double figures today, and there is still
what I'm saying is
not create diamonds.
Yes, they are guilty of coasting, but I'm telling you, I think it's the combination of them not having that attitude and also what the Nuggets did, because the Nuggets were getting better play from just about every position up and down the lineup.
Yeah. And Jokic is by far the best player in the series.
I mean, Jokic, they could not handle him.
No. And Jokic is, I mean, all postseason long. I mean, the shot he hit to beat the Jazz, to give the Nuggets a lead, I mean, that was a ridiculous turnaround with Gobert all over him, contested as could be. It's one of the great clutch shots that we've seen. And then just, I mean, he dominated. He made Montrezl Harrell totally unplayable in this series.
I actually think that Doc's move probably would have been to just bench him and play Marcus Morris and Zubac at center and just live with it.
Boy, that's a tough thing to do to a sixth man of the year.
I mean, I'm you know, in the first half where the Clippers were up by, what were they up at the half? I think maybe 8 or 9 at the half. Harrell was minus 14.
Yeah.
So
and you know what? He never, like, it was a tough situation because obviously his grandma passes. He misses the entire season schedule. He's nowhere close to being in rhythm, in game shape. So the guy's basically trying to chip off 5+ months of rust in the playoffs. It's bad circumstances for him, but. I mean, the facts are he was a liability for the Clippers in this series.
But this
and really in last series too, and against the Mavericks as well.
But Timmy, this is also when you need a leader to step up and rally everybody else around him. And there's been so much talk about Kawhi and is he vocal enough? I think this series is a big knock on Kawhi because Kawhi not only didn't show up when they needed him the most, he wasn't able to get the group to rally around him to get them to a different level.
Yeah, but I mean, that's never going to be his game. I mean, he's not going to be. What about playoff P?
Well, exactly. Yeah, like everybody gets knocked down after this type of performance. But yeah, to me,
you know what, Kawhi's Teflon. When you have two Finals MVPs, your legacy doesn't get turned.
I don't think playoff you're completely Teflon in this sense. I think what my point is that you go back and you look at Toronto. I think that guys like Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, what they showed in that run with Kawhi, just lift them up a little bit more because Kawhi is supposed to be. If not the guy, if we don't agree there, he's supposed to be one of the guys that makes every single other person on a roster that much better.
Right.
And to see the way that they folded reflects directly on the top dog on any team.
Look, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong about that. I'm saying the case is Game 7 of elimination game where you are the heavy favorite and you've already blown a 3-1 lead and you deliver 6 of 22 and 14 points. You don't have to get worried about
five turnovers.
What's that?
That's better than 4 of 15 and 5 turnovers.
Well, look, Paul George is an inconsistent player. He is going to be, I think he's played almost 90 playoff games in his career now, and his shooting percentage is like 41%. He is going to have games where he is terrible, and he's going to have other games where he is good. You cannot count on him to be your number one, which is why the team
has a lot of Gatorade moments. I know that.
Well, that was obviously a laughable commercial, and it remains laughable. But you know, like Paul George, he obviously sucked, but he's not being held up as a guy who was trying to, you know, put his name in the all-time greats. I mean, again, if you're gonna rip down James Harden for his failures, and you're gonna get on LeBron for his failures, I mean, I see LeBron, he hasn't had a playoff game that bad in 10 years. So, okay, if Kawhi comes back next year and leads this team, it becomes like sort of a pivot point, but you can't, he is going to live with 6 of 22, and it's more important than whether he's getting into people's faces in the huddles or whatever.
Well, he's going to live with 6 of 22 and having left a championship team to, you know, to be in LA.
Yeah. If you want to get on real talk, if he had stayed in Toronto, that team would still be alive in the conference finals.
Oh, right? I agree.
He might win a third. He might have gotten a third ring there.
Right. And, you know, listen, he obviously not only went to the Clippers, but orchestrated. I mean, he was the biggest shot caller in last year's free agency. He was the one who orchestrated the domino that shook up the entire league. And, you know, he picked Paul George to be his running mate. And
that's right. And so, I mean, and the reality is this, and I wrote a story, and I got this assignment Sunday night, and I spent a bunch of time Monday writing it. If you're going to hold the Bucks' feet to the fire and say, boy, are you guys in trouble? Your star player is 1 year from free agency. And you know, you're really in trouble. You may think you have to trade him, whatever. You must hold the Clippers now to the same standard, because they traded three unprotected first round picks, two pick swaps, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Gallinari. But I mean, he's not super relevant, but and
they
then
mortgaged
they
the future for this.
And then they traded another first round pick for Marcus Morris to compete in this window. And the reality is that the window was only guaranteed to be 2 years, because that's what Paul and Kawhi have on their contracts. Do I honestly think that those guys are going to leave in a year? I don't, but I didn't think that this was going to happen with this team this year. Okay.
And they're also not getting younger though.
And so that's what I'm saying. They've now squandered. So they opened a window, which we could debate whether it's 2 years or it's going to be 4 years or whatever. Also, they have injury history, so you don't know how many quote healthy years that you're going to get with them. They had a healthy year here. It was an odd year, an unfortunate year. They had injuries during the season. However, at the end, they were fully healthy as a team. So they've squandered one of them. There's just no other way to say it. They've squandered one of them. And the stakes for each of these seasons are so much higher, again, because they have the Brooklyn Nets trade hanging out there. They have Oklahoma City is holding three unprotected picks and two pick swaps. So they have to make hay in this window. And now they have botched it, and Kawhi and Paul George are 1 year away. And Paul George has a contract extension eligible this offseason. And if you've traded three first-round picks and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for him, I think you are compelled to offer him the contract extension.
You know what I would do? I would replay Game 7 and offer him the veterans minimum.
Well, you're just being ridiculous. You have to make – we expect you to make real comments on here. But I was just saying, like, what if Paul George doesn't sign it? Now, Paul George has in his career, and again, right now, okay, you can open it up and you can make fun of him, but he is an excellent player.
He's an excellent player, but not in the biggest moments, B. Well, that's the problem with Paul George.
He's an all-star.
You need him to deliver in the biggest of moments. Repeatedly, the evidence is there that he's just not there sometimes. And quickly on this, if you believe in basketball karma, the Clippers, they're sitting there laughing and making fun of Damian Lillard. In the moment, as a fan, I'm going, what the hell are you doing?
And I tell you what, I loved how Dame handled that, just calmly reminding, hey, Pat Bev, I sent your ass home. Hey, Paul George, I sent your ass home with probably the best buzzer beater in NBA history right in your grill. And then today, just having a little tweet fest, having a little Cancun, see you there type situation. well played by Dame Lillard.
It was Cabo. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. So here's the thing. This is one of Pat Riley's things. When you have a team that you think is a championship team, if you don't win, it doesn't mean that you break it up. Sometimes you lose and you come back the next year and you try to fix your mistakes and do it. This is one of the things that he was talking about in vain to LeBron when they lost to the Spurs in 2014 and LeBron blew Miami. I don't think they have a whole lot of options here. I think they probably have to re-sign their guys because they can't replace them. You know, you may say to yourself, well, look, I'm not real sure we want to make a huge investment in Montrezl Harrell if he's not going to be able, but he's not replaceable. They can't just like go use their mid-level exception to go replace that guy. So I think they're going to have to try to re-sign him. I think they're going to have to try to re-sign Marcus Morris. Frankly, they've traded a first-round pick for him. They really should. And I think Jermichael Green is the other potential free agent. I think they're going to have to re-sign those guys, if nothing else, then to protect the asset that you could maybe use in a trade later.
But cold as it is, honestly, Montrezl Harrell's probably a lot more affordable now than he was before the NBA restart.
He cost himself a lot of money. I just no other way to say it.
Do we think that any of this would have played out differently in a normal world?
No.
I mean, my thing is, if the Clippers were going to play at this level, the Lakers were going to slaughter them. So whether or not that would have happened if we were playing these games in May and June, it's probably better for the game of basketball. It's not better for ratings probably, but it's better for the game of basketball that the team that has actually earned its way to get to the conference finals and is playing high-level basketball will face the Lakers. Because if the Clippers played that way, in fact, let me ask you this. Friedel, how do you foresee this matchup going? I want to tell you, during the regular season, whatever that's worth to you, the Lakers were 3-1 against the Nuggets, and they won both times they played in Denver. And Anthony Davis dominated, just kicked Jokic's tail, averaged 29-9 and shot 54%. Jokic only averaged 16 and shot like 44%. Now, that's not going to be the Jokic that shows up on Friday. But Anthony Davis has had a lot of success against them. And
they have no answer for LeBron.
Of course not. Of course not. You know, they don't have those wing defenders that the Clippers thought they had. So how do you think that goes, Friedel?
The Lakers are the clear favorites, Pete.
Oh, it's a huge – I mean, the Lakers are dancing in the streets.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, my man McTen is just – it's just beaming right now at everything that's happening with the old Lakers. But the reality is I didn't think that the Lakers were going to come together this quickly in the moment already. So they have far exceeded my expectations. Lakers fans love to resend me a clip from the jump about 2 weeks into the season when I said it was going to be the Clippers and the Jazz, if they were healthy, that I thought would show down at the end. So,
well, hey, if Lakers, not for that Bogdanovich wrist sprain,
it crushed him. But to the point about this series, I would bet on the Lakers, but I wouldn't bet that much money on them right now.
I would. Come on.
Just
stop.
Because. No. I think the Lakers are going to win, and I think they're going to win handily. This is to B's point. The Nuggets team that the Lakers saw months and months ago is not the same Nuggets team. Well, they have so much confidence. They have so much confidence right now that I wouldn't put anything past them completely. But the Lakers are absolutely a prohibitive favorite walking in. If I had to put money down right now, I'd probably say Lakers in five.
Plus playoff Rondo's coming for Jamal Murray. Rondo's coming for him. William Rondo's going to be talking trash in the seats too.
My phone is such a mess right now. I mean, I am getting texts from executives, agents. I got a text from an owner a little bit ago. People around the game, workout guys, assistant coaches from other teams, coaches. The chatter that is happening right now in the NBA, I mean, I just live in one little corner of it. Imagine the players out there right now. I mean, you think Dame and CJ are going off on Twitter? Can you imagine what's going on in some group texts right now?
I'm telling you, my God. Arrogance turned off a lot of people. They acted like they're some kind of dynasty.
They are a very high quality organization. They made a lot of really smart moves.
That has gotten them what? Not a trip to the conference finals.
Speak softly.
Did a phenomenal job. The players on the roster acted like they were some kind of dynasty, and they hadn't done anything.
They acted like they were already there, Tim.
A couple of players
acted
did.
Like they were already there.
A couple of players did.
Paul George, Pat Beverly, Marcus Morris. I mean, it's a pretty significant slice of the rotation right there.
Man, I mean, this just like I can't believe some of the stuff that's being said to me right now. All right. I mean, like just the slander that's being thrown at some of these guys. I didn't sense, McMahon, you're not wrong. I mean, you know, you've been on this, but I didn't understand the built up dislike. I think some of it is, and the same thing with happened with the Heat in that first year.
Yeah.
You know, their off season move was such a huge coup,
right?
That there was jealousy, and yep. So, you know, like go back to high school. You know, when you wanted the girl and this other guy got her, and then she dumped him, you felt
never
good
happened
about
to me.
It.
Never happened to me.
Yeah, you didn't have girls in your high school. They didn't. They didn't let him in the military.
Stop. Wasn't military. That was the option I turned down.
No, but B, I wanna move forward on that for a second. It's the big bully. It's the big high school bully that sat there and talked and talked and talked. And I think it came into focus for a lot of people after that exchange with Dame a few weeks ago with the Blazers. But
yep.
The bully ran his mouth and was cocky all the way through. And then not only did the bully melt down when times got rough, but they found this foe that had the underdog that had these players that were knocking down shots all over the place, and they weren't engaging in the BS. They just kept playing. And
I mean, is this actually turned into the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James and Anthony Davis as somewhat sympathetic figures here? I mean, they've been somewhat underdogs. To the Clippers. I mean, not to the Laker fans. I realize that the Laker fan thought 82-0. I mean, I realize that. And the Laker fan has got to be feeling pretty good about that. But, I mean, this LeBron's had some – over the years, you know, people hammer him on his finals record. And that's – you know, it is what it is. He's had some misfortune happen
to him.
Well,
also, I think hammering his finals record, like, it's not better to lose in the conference finals than the finals. It's not better to be, you know, 3-0 than whatever.
I know. What I'm just saying is there have been quite a few postseasons where things didn't work out for LeBron.
2011 is the one he has to own, and he did.
Agreed.
Other than that, you know.
Right.
He's held up his end.
Okay. This postseason is working out for him. So what I would say here is the final analysis from me before we move on to the East. LeBron has been given a glorious opportunity. The Bucks are gone. The Clippers are gone. Those are the two teams that we thought for months were the teams that were going to give them problems. All right? He is holding in his hand a chance at that fourth title, a chance at that winning that title with that third team, putting another banner up at Staples. Legendary status as a Laker going forward. He's got to take it. He could play another 3 years of the Lakers and not get this opportunity again, whether it's the Clippers or Heat or whoever, wherever Giannis goes or whatever happens. So now, and I mean, his eyes.
The Nuggets.
The Nuggets. His eyes are wide open on this one. He knows. So he's got to take it.
Yeah, he could not have picked a better way for this these conference semifinals.
Well, it wasn't totally in his control. Like it wasn't in his control that Kyrie hurt his knee and Kevin Love got his shoulder ripped out in a year that they probably had a chance to beat the Warriors. So now the worm turned. Karma has tossed him one back. Grab it. And he knows to grab it. And that team has enough veterans, I think, or they know. We'll see if they can do it.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, They're all sinking raccoons. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Don't you want to see Jimmy Butler against LeBron right now, though? Is that the finals you want to see?
Good question. I hadn't thought of it.
I've been so focused on history, but dude, Jimmy Butler to me is the most fascinating. He's the most fascinating character in the bubble.
Well, LeBron versus the Heat.
Yeah.
By the way,
LeBron versus Riley is what intrigues me.
It's interesting that it's, you know, yeah, LeBron versus Riley, but Pat Riley's not playing. They don't get to play in Miami. LeBron has not won in Miami. Or like did they win there this year? LeBron hadn't won in Miami since he left. I think maybe he won there this year. Anyway, the Miami Heat, this game was it's unfortunate that it's being reduced to the appetizer. What a high-level basketball game, McMahon.
I mean, for Jimmy Butler to have that drive, the and-one drive that's the go-ahead points, and that not even to be the story of the game by far is crazy. That Bam block, I mean, dude, that's his weak hand going up with his left hand. Tatum has that thing cocked back.
The ball,
he just rejects
the cylinder.
Yes. That would break a mere mortal's wrist.
The ball was in the cylinder.
He threw it back. That's the best playoff block. No disrespect to Kawhi's FU block on Jamal Murray, especially since that didn't help him win a series. But that playoff block since LeBron's chase down on Iggy.
LeBron's chase down block happens in the fourth quarter of a game seven. The circumstances have to matter. But in terms of difficulty.
Oh, my God.
The idea that he could make that block, by the way, without having his hand hit the rim, because, by the way, like, I've been very high on Jason Tatum. Even last year as he was struggling, I was trying to hold on to my, and he's backed that up. He's going to have to get stronger because he got worked physically by Jimmy on that drive to the basket. Worked. And he just wasn't stronger than Bam Adebayo. He was just weaker. I don't know how else to say it. He was weaker there.
Yeah. I think also 99.47% of NBA players are weaker than Bam Adebayo. Also,
what a player.
I mean, Jimmy Butler's going to bully damn near any wing in the league. So I don't know if. You know, can Tatum get in the weight room a little bit? Sure, but I don't necessarily know that this is evidence that he's some sort of.
No, I know.
Those are beasts.
On those two momentous occasions, Tatum went strength on strength and got beat on both of them.
Yeah, and the Heat have two all-star bullies, two just badass.
And Jimmy's
dude.
Shot from the corner, the three that, I mean, Marcus
that was
Smart.
Unbelievable.
By the
I
way,
can't
Marcus
believe
Smart.
Jimmy's that tough and he dreams Michelob Ultra.
You did have a funny tweet about that.
I mean, my God.
It's a big paycheck, Mr.
Marcus
McMahon.
Smart, by the way, gets them to overtime with the flop on the inbounds play that gets the free throw.
Just a classic Marcus Smart play.
The second greatest flop of, I mean, maybe it's the better, you know, that he had that flop against Toronto where he was trailing the play. I mean, this flop got them to overtime. So I have to say this flop is even better.
Well, and the best part was Kimba pushed, I forgot who it was, pushed the dude into him. And then he flopped.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredibly intelligent play. And by the way, like the Heat complained about it, but. If I were them, I would have been apoplectic because they lost the game. They lost the chance to win in regulation because of that flop. It ended up working out for him. But Jimmy's three there, that should have been the game winner because they ended up getting the stop when Tatum didn't drive on that one and took the outside shot. I do like that the Celtics are going to Tatum because I think it's so hard for Kemba. Although Kemba, with that step back, the way he puts that foot, You can so see all the hours he's poured in where he, you know, when he goes to that step back where he goes left and he puts his right foot into the ground and at this angle that allows him to get maximum leverage to push back and get that shot off. By the way, I also want to say, how about Eric Spoelstra riding Tyler Hero
40 minutes in this game? What a rookie playoff performance.
And he is out there working his tail off on defense. I mean,
even if you give a step back, I mean, he defended it well. It's just a great shot.
If you like basketball, I mean, if you are not a Celtics fan, if you are just a casual fan, I find it hard to believe, Friedel, that you wouldn't watch the Heat play and say, I like that.
They're a fun group. They defend. But B, what I keep coming back to is that Jimmy found his basketball soulmate with that organization. I mean, he and the Heat are the Spider-Man meme of the NBA. He just fits there. And you wrote a great story about this last week, I know. But I've covered him since he came into the league. I have never seen him happier. And he just knows that he fits. He knows that they trust him. And it's really funny. At the end of that game, we're sitting on the Zoom, and I asked him right at the end, I said, you've always prided yourself on your confidence, but with the way you've delivered in the postseason the last few weeks, are you even more confident than you were before? And he gives me the, oh, because I'm not that much more confident. It's all the same, but I'm more confident in my guys. And it's funny because Malika texted me. She was standing right there in the bubble. And she said that as Jimmy had started to answer, Bam Adebayo is on the side and he's waiting to talk to the media. And Bam goes, oh, yeah, he is. Oh, yeah, he is. And that's the scary part for the rest of the league, because Jimmy has always believed in himself more than anybody else. He's always believed he could have these moments.
Right.
But these last few weeks have taken him to a level I've never seen him at before.
Well, and look, Jimmy obviously ain't for everybody. By the end of Chicago, he wasn't for Chicago. He damn sure wasn't for Minnesota. I mean, that, you know, that was a bad cultural fit. That became very clear. You know, I'm still not completely clear what exactly happened in Philadelphia. Thought that was a pretty good fit. You know, so did Joel Embiid, apparently. But he is absolutely for Miami. I mean, his personality is a perfect fit there. And you know, it's funny, they're not all like, you wouldn't look at Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Goran Dragic. I mean, these are finesse type of players, but they fit really well with him. And then, you know, Adebayo, tough dude. You know, people overlooked when they made that Iguodala trade, Jay Crowder's a damn good NBA man.
Crowder's
player. I mean, Crowder has been more important to them than Iguodala.
Oh, Crowder's playing way more important minutes than Iguodala.
Well, Crowder has been critical. And look, Crowder's shooting the ball great right now, which that comes and goes for him. But what he does, he allowed them to move Bam to center full time and play that small ball lineup, because he is, you know, he is a really solid small ball four. He's that same type of, he's not as talented as Jimmy, but he's that same type of kind of Marquette tough personality.
You know, Eric Spoelstra is an excellent tactician. He will put them in good positions. He will do well within that. And they don't have, you know, they don't have the inferiority issue of not having home court. In other words, this game was technically a Celtics home game. So they don't, you know, they're the number five seed. They haven't had to play a road game. So that works out for them. Then you have to say, you know, Pat Riley's dream is if he could run his team like it was the military. I wrote this recently that if Pat Riley's life had just been slightly different, he could have been on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, because he was a basketball player. So he went to Kentucky and played basketball. But if he had not been a basketball player, I could have definitely seen him in the military. They run their operation like a paramilitary operation. They treat their players like soldiers. Like the way that they obsessively weigh and measure the body fat of their players, the drills that they make them run, the conditioning, like it is not far off from the Navy SEALs. And Riley is totally into the military. He honors a military person before every single game, has for like 15 years. And remember when the Heat got the big three, you know where he went for the first training camp? He went to a military base in Pensacola because that's where he wanted him to begin their run, on a military base. So what are they doing right now? They're living in essentially, yeah. It's a five-star barracks. They're at boot camp. And his guy, Jimmy Butler, his leader of his team, is saying, I don't even want my family and friends here. Don't even come. We're on a business trip. Now, I don't want to go overboard.
But his business is coffee.
Right.
And business is good on a lot of levels.
$20. $20 a cup. This is Pat Riley's dream.
Yeah.
He's got his team living in a barracks.
And Jimmy's dream. Jimmy is such a perfect fit for all this.
Udonis Haslam called his shot, B. A few weeks ago, he said this team was built for the bubble. And there's been so much talk about Heat culture and what it means and how it's kind of come back to life. And they've righted the ship after a bunch of bad free agency signings over the last few years. But this is what they all expected coming into the bubble. This is why, again, we talked about the lack of mental toughness with the Clippers. This Heat group has it in spades. They believe they can beat the bubble, and they believe they're preparing themselves every night to go and face, in this case, the Celtics, and find a way. But having said all this about the Heat, as we sit here tonight after game one, I'd still take the Celtics to win the
series. This game was skin tight. It could have so easily gone either way, like five different ways.
I'd still take the Heat to win this series, much to my mom's chagrin.
Yeah, you still take the Celtics.
I mean, boy, you're what a flip-flopper you are.
What do you mean flip-flopper?
You took the Celtics and you took the Heat? Well, I mean,
you just misspoke. You didn't realize it.
No. I would take the Celtics to win the series. I think they've got too many guys who can create their own shot.
Did you guys both pick the Celtics? I don't make picks, but did you pick the Heat?
Yeah.
He picked the Heat. I picked the Celtics. I took the Heat.
To win the East, though, so what do I know? I had Buck Raptors in the East Finals, so
did you have Clippers? Who'd you have out of the West?
I had Lakers.
I thought
Clippers
still alive
in the West Finals.
Still alive.
In full transparency, I had Bucks Raptors at the start before everything began, and then I watched the Bucks, and I've been following the Heat now for damn near 3 months, and I picked the Heat to win that Bucks series because I just saw the matchups, I saw how motivated they were, but now as I watch the Celtics, I just think that in the end, in this series, as great as Jimmy has been, and he's not going to stop doing that now, the Celtics defensively are really, really tough, and they have three guys in Kemba, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum who can get their own shots off all the time.
Well, and they are saying that they're going to get Hayward back. I don't think it'll be for game two, but
You know what? Great. So you're going to get a rusty, out of rhythm Hayward back. I mean, look. Okay.
I mean, they're leaning pretty hard on Grant Williams and Brad Wanamaker. So I think seeing Gordon Hayward even for 20 minutes is going to be a welcome sight. You can't ignore that when you're projecting this series, especially if it's going to be this close. And McMahon, you could be right. He could come back and he could go 2 of 8, and they just end up not even using him by the end. I'm not saying that, but I just think that's a factor.
I just think it's an insane challenge to come back off of a significant injury.
I agree.
Where you're not chipping off just the 4 to 5, 6 weeks, whatever it'll be, of injury rehab time. He's basically got to chip off 6 months of rust. I saw it with Russell Westbrook, where he was a shell of himself in these playoffs.
But again,
Russell's coming off coronavirus too.
Okay. If he plays 3 good minutes at the right time, it could be a factor. I just think it's when you're evaluating the series, I think you have to take it into account.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Before we go, I just want to give one last tip of the cap to Michael Malone. Back when I met him 15 years ago, he went by Mike, but now he's very clear he wants to go by Michael. I think today was his birthday. Yesterday or today was his birthday. Before this game, I think this summarizes the way that the Clippers and the Nuggets approach this entire last week. It was brought up to Malone that the Clippers were undefeated when their coaches wore the salmon-colored polos. Because, you know, one of the things that's happened in the bubble is the coaches, the coaches align their outfits and, you know, they rotate through them. And Mike Malone, who has been a quote machine for years, but specifically since they've been in Orlando, is like, we dressed in all black like Johnny Cash. I don't even own anything in my wardrobe that's salmon, and I'll bet our record in all black is better than theirs in salmon. And it's just bravado, I realize, but that is a coach who's not afraid of losing.
Hey, Nick. Jolly old Saint Nick. You know why Wendy loves him some Michael Malone?
Why is that?
Because anybody who goes from a long time buzz cut to like a, you know, pretty
the
hairdo.
Extra fluff on top.
Is a total Wendy dude.
You know,
Wendy can relate.
I had to
hey,
write.
Let Michael Malone start using some hairspray and they're like brothers.
I have to say. I went back and watched the 2007 Cavs Pistons game. I had to write a little thing for a Western Conference preview in the event that the Nuggets won. I'd written a beautiful one pitting Kawhi and LeBron. That's now been ejected to the moon. It'll never be see the light of day.
Send it to Bomb Tim's. He'll enjoy it.
A single tear goes down his cheek as he reads it. Kawhi, LeBron,
Kawhi's better.
That's going to be a tough podcast to listen back to for him. I agree, but you know, look, you know, some people, you know, not everybody can be right all the time. He called the Lakers. His predictions have been pretty good, but it came to
called the Raptors last year.
Sorry, I interrupt your story to make fun of Bon Timms, which actually I'm not sorry for that. But you were saying you
anyway.
Went back and watched,
I was watching rewatching the 2007 playoffs when Mike Malone was an assistant with the Cavs and LeBron was, you know, leading that sort of magical run till they reached the Spurs, but they went through the magical run to reach the finals. And Mike Malone had full head of dark hair, very forward hairline, and so did LeBron. Their hair is
no Mike Malone's hair. I'm telling you, it was the shock of the bubble. I'm a voluntary buzz cut guy, but you can tell. Like I got the Jokic style, where you can see.
I'm telling you, if you'd have seen Malone,
Mike Malone was like to the bone. Well, I was shocked when. Now, again, we talked. This is two straight weeks we've discussed Tony Brothers. Tony Brothers, I believe there's some artificial situations going on there.
I reject that a guy got artificial anything during pandemic. I reject it. All right, we're off base. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thanks for sticking with us. We got a lot to go on. The conference finals, I suspect, are going to be incredibly enjoyable, and this Clippers fallout is going to go, who knows how this is going to play out in the next few days, just alone, much less the offseason. Stay with us. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you this weekend. Thanks for listening.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.